Welcome to Happy News Network.
We are here to brighten your week while you take a break from doom scrolling.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Shayna.
We wanted to brighten social media, so we decided to make a podcast all about happy news.
Join us as we discuss our happy news finds.
Shayna, what is your happy news this week?
So my friend in England created a community pod after being inspired by Happy News Network. So it's a pod of doing good, not a pod so much of isolation. So there's talk of a community library and other things pending COVID safety and whatnot. So my friend Andrew has been such a great supporter, listening to the podcast and following us on social media. So I wanted to give love back to him and his wife, Chloe.
Love. Thanks, Andrew and Chloe.
Yeah, and their adorable new kitten Pumpkin.
Oh, love Pumpkin. Love a Pumpkin moment.
Yes, yes. She's adorable.
Oh, cute.
What's your happy news this week?
It sounds really horrible after your lovely happy news, but I love murder shows. I love serial killer things.
Right there with
I love
you. Yep.
All of that stuff. And I know I'm super behind on the times, but I just finished season 2 of the Fargo TV series. First of all, I didn't do proper research. I knew Nick Offerman was in season 2, and I obviously love him because I have a glittery pillow with his face on it. But also Kirsten Dunst is in season 2, and that was the biggest shocker of all to me. I was like, oh my God, Kirsten Dunst. Oh my God, I love her. Oh my God. Yeah, I finished season 2 of Fargo, and that really brought me joy and gave me something to look forward to every single day. Because I didn't watch it until like end of day, 6:30 p.m., make dinner, watch Fargo after dinner.
So, did you just watch the whole season in one go?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I support that. I've definitely never done that before.
Right.
did you watch season 1?
Yeah, I watched season 1 like 2 years ago and loved it. So I don't know why. I probably just got busy and didn't have time to watch season 2. Mm-hmm. And it like came up on Hulu the other day because I've been watching nothing but Bob's Burgers for the last year. So yeah, Fargo season 2 and Bob's Burgers, very similar. Don't know how that came across, but yeah, Fargo season 2.
I love that.
Highly recommend.
Another show to, put on the to watch list of all the shows you recommend to me. So.
Yeah, it's very like been there, done that, but I guess kids are now watching 30 Rock, even though that's been off the air for 100 years. So go back to Fargo season 2 because it's delightful.
Yeah, I want to watch the Ted Danson Mayer show because it was inspired by the original spinoff concept from 30 Rock and it got some decent reviews. And I mean, who does not love Ted Danson? He is America's grandpa right now. I mean,
Ted Danson in Fargo season 2. Loved it. Big, big fan.
I mean, Cheers is far and away my favorite show ever. Well, that's not true. Second/tied for first is also Frasier, which is, hello, it's 20 years of consecutive television. So
right.
Anything with Ted Danson in it, I'll probably watch and love.
Yeah, it's delightful. And there's something wonderful that I love about like the Fargo series, even the movie I really liked as a kid, mm-hmm. watching it entirely too young, just about the Midwestern, like, oh, we killed somebody. Don't you know? That's too bad. All right. And like being from the Midwest, I'm like, oh, I totally get this. This is amazing.
I am for sure not from the Midwest. No, I'm from the greater Philadelphia, aka New Jersey suburbs, where we like to deal with our problems head on.
Yeah.
And smooth transition into my first article. A study last March in Philadelphia tackled some problems head on. So they showed that even modest green spaces go a long way in lifting the spirits of those living in underserved urban areas. Oh, yeah. This is the low-cost antidote to urban decay. Not the makeup. No, like the actual like fall away, like the dilapidated unkempt, the neglected areas of urban areas. I was so poorly worded. Oh my God. but this study suggests that lavish urban parks and amenities like the new High Line in New York, or fancy landscaping aren't necessary because those types of parks fail to adequately serve local communities. So this study sort of went with the smaller is better mentality, and it's also a lot more cost effective. So let's talk about the study. Researchers randomly selected 541 overgrown vacant lots across Philadelphia. That's 541 is about an eighth of the estimated number of similar lots in the greater Philadelphia area. So the lots they studied were parceled into clusters, and Philadelphians living within a quarter mile of the different lots were asked questions about their mental health and overall well-being. So, for example, one specific study cluster got a greening intervention, which involved the Philadelphia Horticultural Society and Land Care Program overhauling the lots in full. They removed trash, they removed overgrown vegetation, and they planted small trees, grass, wooden fences, the whole green makeover. And they basically made attractive green spaces out of old, for lack of a better word, eyesores. And 18 months later, that specific cluster group of people showed a 42% decrease of depressive feelings compared to people who lived near the vacant lots that were left untouched or only had minimal renovations, like if they only removed the trash. The people in comparison had 42% less depressive feelings. And it's so important to show that these neighborhoods are the poorest and usually most dilapidated, and the makeover lots linked also to double-digit decreases in crime rates. And it's just really neat. I won't go into too much of the psychology behind why this happens, because that's sort of its own deep dive in itself. But in terms of the practical and financial side of it, for other cities to consider, when comparing $70 billion annually to treat depression versus 4,000 lots in Philadelphia, roughly at $1,600 to renovate, that's $6.4 million plus monthly maintenance, which $6.4 million is a lot of money, but it's less than a tenth of $70 billion. Right. So it's a very affordable way to start combating community depression and help rebuild communities instead of looking at places that rebuild to just drive in gentrification or tourism. It's a way to sort of focus on the people living there currently.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. That's genius. I love using spaces to their fullest, really.
And the fact that it doesn't require a lot, it's a makeover in terms of let's clean up the trash, let's plant stuff. It's everybody wins. The planet wins and the people win.
Right. I love that. And like maybe you aren't like clinically diagnosed as depressed, but you know, like there's something about greenery and being outside, even if you're afraid of everything that's outside, like I am, going outside, like makes me feel better on some level. It's just, I love that.
Yeah. And not everyone has to be depressed to have depressive feelings. You can have, you know, you can have one or two symptoms of allergies, but not be fully allergic to everything around you. You know, if you just walk outside and see gloominess, you know, it's sort of like that winter depression or slump that people can fall into. It's very common for people to feel less, lively in the winter or less happy in the winter because there's less access to sunlight, especially if you're in an office all day.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So brilliant. Yeah. I love that. No, I love that. On the other side of the country in Seattle, nearly 500 home bakers are being led by Catherine Curley to bake bread to give back to their community. So I saw this article and immediately it like pinged, like I've been doing all of my at-home baking and pastry making, all kinds of stuff. So I'm loving what Catherine Curley is doing up there. The project is called Community Loaves, and they've donated over 1,300 loaves of fresh bread to local food banks. Catherine and a few initial members of the group developed a quick, super simple recipe for honey oat bread. Each recipe makes 4 loaves and uses locally sourced flour. And Curly encourages the bakers to keep one loaf and donate the other 3. And she calls that an effort to thank them for their time while paying it forward. So it's not like a give or take. It's like a give and take situation. And in addition to donating over 1,300 loaves of bread over the holiday season, like November through December of 2020, they adapted their loaf recipe to make thousands of holiday rolls and donated 4,000 homemade pecan finger cookies. So Community Loaves in Seattle. Brilliant.
You said 500 bakers?
Yeah.
That's remarkable. It's a mark of quantity of people. Like, yeah, one person can bake, I don't know, let's say you bake your, you know, heart out for a week. You're going to bake 50, 60 loaves of something. You get 500 people who want to do this in addition to their daily life instead of just dedicating their full schedule to making a difference. 1,300 loaves just of this honey bread, honey oat bread alone. Yeah. I mean, that is so great. And I love that it's all about local sourcing and local giving back as a way of just, you know, I make a sandwich for you, I give a sandwich to them sort of a thing.
Yeah. And it's fresh bread from the community. In like, food pantries don't get a ton of fresh foods, you know? So yeah, really, really cool stuff. And like, none of these people, at least what I read, none of these people are like high-end bakers or anything. They just like everybody had a sourdough starter in March of 2020. So they just took those same kind of bakers with that kind of home do-it-yourself enthusiasm and did this. And Catherine Curley, literally, she like collects all the bread and packages it herself. Like, she's got a whole distribution center set up in her home.
It's amazing. I love that.
I'm obsessed with it. So great.
Okay. So I have an article that's also about giving back to the community and more of a sort of personal redemptive arc. This is the story of Pastor Mick. I saw this profile on him and I was like, I have to share this. It's not even news. It's just a whole story of him. Pastor Mick is like the model of a life transformation. He is over in the UK. And by the time he was in his mid-40s, Mick Fleming was an established underground fixer. People rang up to clear drug debts. So if people called him, usually something was about to go down. And one day on the job, he had this literal just flash of realization of what his life was. And it just basically knocked him onto himself. And he had this whole realization of what his life was. And by the time he was in his mid-40s, he'd spent 30 years having turned to drugs. And 30 years ago, he had his family experienced tragedy. And so that sort of led him down that pathway. And part of that flash of realization was that Mick realized that he just needed to make a change. And he had some other personal incidents happen. And the Mental Health Care Act sanctioned him to a psychiatric unit. And he said that place made him feel like a person again. The other patients there made him feel cared for and loved and welcome. And that helped him begin feeling emotions again. So in that facility, Mick met Pastor Tony, and he began to study prayer and spend time with Pastor Tony. And he developed what he could feel. He felt like a person again. He started experiencing emotions and the idea of a hopeful life. So Mick decided to go fully sober, and he worked with a tutor at the University of Manchester. And it took him a little longer than he wanted after being diagnosed with dyslexia, and just the idea of going back to school after everything he experienced, I think is remarkable. Eventually he attained a degree in theology. So Pastor Mick is now with the charity Church on the Street Ministries, and he helps the homeless, he helps drug users, he helps people who are hungry. And during COVID, he says he's never been more needed, and he helps in so many ways, whether it's finding a bed for people to sleep on to just food distribution. Like, one of the days listed in the article, like when they went with him, they noted that his van was just filled with snacks to give out to people. And his phone is always ringing. He visits 10 or so homes a day, 7 days a week. And sometimes he helps people who don't always see the light at the end of the tunnel. Or maybe they see the light at the end of the tunnel, but they know they might maybe not make it all the way there. But he says he helps people in their qualitative or physical or emotional lives as best he can, you know, even if it's just for 4 days, you know, we're going to help you for those 4 days. And so Pastor Mick says he's privileged to serve the people of Burnley, and he sees his story as redemptive.
And I love that.
Yeah.
That's a really great lesson in, like, just because you were dealt a crappy hand doesn't mean you can't try again, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And just because you made certain choices doesn't mean you can't make other choices eventually.
Yeah. Like I personally, like we have no kind of like training in anything other than theater and Post-its, but like, I firmly believe that like addiction is a form of mental health. And there are some people that don't want to get help because they are so mentally unstable that they don't realize they need help or don't think they need help. And just, yeah, having somebody like that, that's really incredible. Wow.
Yeah. And I think we are by nature addictive. You know, we surround ourselves with the things we love. So we go further and further into that love. And for some people, the things they love are more harmful than helpful. I love how he's willing to give back. I mean, he's like, if you need it, he finds it for you. Like, it's just, it's, it's, he's like a real life guardian angel now.
Truly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible. On a completely like fun and fluffy note, I found a dog mountain resort in Vermont, in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. There is, it's called the Dog Mountain Resort, and it is heaven for dog lovers. Like it's, there are swimming ponds, agility courses, and an art gallery, all for dogs. So it's like a no leash zone. The place, it's on 150 acres of private mountaintop land. And because a majority of the activities are outside, you can still do this even in COVID times. And yeah, the property is funded by the nonprofit Friends of Dog Mountain, and it's open year round for free.
Hello. I wonder if it involves dogs socializing with other dogs, because Lucy is not a fan of other dogs.
Oh yeah, it does.
But the shame is I would absolutely love to take her, but she would hide from them.
Yeah. But anyway,
but that's so cute though. Retreat. Oh my gosh. Thank you for sharing. I wonder if we could just go and be like, oh, we're here for the dogs.
Yeah. Can I just play? Yeah, you probably could.
They're not going to say no to charitable donations in the form of residence, you know?
So anyway,
we're just here for the dogs. Flip. Yeah. Thank you for sharing. I've got a little, oh my gosh, I have like some more cerebral, like a little more, like, I don't want to say like cerebral, but like darker, like a little mental health journey stories today. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go for it on the name pronunciation here. Patrick Skluzicek served in Iraq, and his son Tyler noticed after he returned home that he wasn't quite as fun or outgoing. And so Patrick served in the U.S. Army as a convoy commander, and it turns out that he was struggling, like many, with PTSD. So back in 2015, Tyler was in college, and he participated in a, it, this is so cool, it's called a computer hackathon, but it's a planned event where computer developers come together for an intensive and they build prototypes to tackle specific problems. So it's not actually a hackathon. It's just a, it's like Comic-Con for computer developers. Yeah, and that hackathon focused that year on PTSD. So he like saved up all his money and went. And Tyler and his team used technology to program a smartwatch to detect the onset of night terrors based on heart rate and motion. So the concept was to use technology to imitate what a service dog would do. Speaking of dogs. So service dogs recognize traumatic nightmare symptoms, and then they nudge the person or lick them awake. So they program the smartwatch to use gentle vibrations to disrupt the REM cycle. And then the person can continue sleeping unaffected, but stay within the sleep cycle. So Patrick was Tyler's test project, of course, and evidently he was a trooper. Early trials had a more zapping vibration, and he said it completely spooked him. And sure. They monitored him wearing the watch around the clock, and Tyler said it was a little uncomfortable. It made him feel maybe hyper aware, too aware of his dad's metrics. And he's like, it's like having a baby, but it's my dad, and it's only supposed to be relevant when he's sleeping. But they did around the clock metric measurement. And so once they got that formula right, Patrick said it was life-changing, and he's gotten his life back. So he's remarried again. His marriage is back on track. He's working again as a mechanic, and he does not let those dreams rule his life, which is such a great feel-good circle for that whole family. And even better, an investor purchased the rights to the app, and the FDA approved it back in November 2020. So soon it'll be available via prescription by the VA.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And that's another example of like a not amazing situation and learning something from it and attempting to prevent it in the future. That's mm-hmm. awesome. Well, I kind of love that I'm closing the episode with this article that I found, because we talked, this episode was kind of like mental health heavy. And I, you know, I am like, I know this is Happy News Network, but I, Kristen, am the queen of doom and gloom. And like my sarcasm and general just like blah attitude about literally everything brings me great joy at times. But other times it kind of sends me into this like negative spiral, and that is super unhealthy. And I can recognize that. And it's been almost a year. It's March 13th will have been a year since any of us, at least me, I was able to work in the field that I'm trained in. So I often the thought crosses my mind of what's the point? Why am I doing this? Why am I still trying? There's no point. But I'm really trying to take an active step in like getting away from that in 2021. So I found that I've been doing a lot of research. Like, how do I get out of this? And I know the ultimate answer is to go to therapy, but that's a whole other conversation about healthcare that I'm not ready to get into. Anyway, I found an article. I found a research article. UC Berkeley did a study with over 1,000 people ages from 8 to 80 about gratitude. So this study proved that those who practiced gratitude were more physically healthy with a stronger immune system and better sleep. And they were also happier and felt less lonely than people who did not practice gratitude. So I know practicing gratitude, like when I hear it, I think of like, be thankful for things. Like, I'm thankful that I woke up today. I'm thankful that I have a toothbrush. I'm thankful that I have a vehicle. I'm thankful that, you know, but there are other ways to do that. You can keep a journal, which is what I try to do, where I just like write things down every day. I write down what I'm grateful for, whether it is like, I'm grateful that I woke up in my bed today. I'm grateful that I went on a walk, whatever. Yeah. Or you could, if you're not a writer, you can go on a walk and have those same thoughts. Just take 20 minutes, walk around outside and just, you know, I'm happy that I woke up today and that I had a cup of coffee. And it can be as simple as that. And not only does it help you get into like a happier mind space, but also movement boosts your endorphins, which make you happy. So that's another positive. You can also, I mean, as much as I kind of despise social media, you can go to social media and just like thank somebody publicly if that is what you need to make you feel better and put yourself in a happier mindset, or just thanking your cashier at the grocery store or wherever you can go. But like, last but by no means least, do not dwell on the negative is what this study taught me. Like, there's a ton of unrest in the world these days. We see it all the time every day. But by the time this episode airs, from now to when this airs, who even knows what's going to go on? Like, we have no idea what's going on. And the lesson that I learned from this is that even though things are absolutely horrible and there are so many things that we need to change, we can still be grateful for the little things, like getting out of bed and putting on a clean pair of pants. And like, I know I need to be better about this personally. So this was mostly for me, but like, if this helps anybody out there, like start journaling or going for a walk or just thanking their grocer, whatever, I hope that it does. So
I love that. I'm identifying with basically everything you've said. And I think also when you're going from 100 to 0, and I mean, yes, we keep busy, us theater folk, we are finding ways to keep busy during this time, but at the same time, it's not what we know as the norm. And we're not going at 100% in the way that we know we can push ourselves to, which is both good and bad. But I think that makes us more prone to dwelling on the negative. When you don't have time to deal with it, you find a way to make peace with it and move on more quickly. And so it's been a very interesting 11-ish months, because we've had so much time to be always able to hit refresh on the news. And it's not like I'm about to go underground on the subway and not get signal for 20 minutes. And by the time I'm off the subway, I forgot that I wanted to read the news in the first place. Like I just, it's been a completely different way of going about my day to day. And I definitely identify with you there on a lot of what you said. And, you know, I'm grateful to get out of bed. Not everyone has a bed. Not everyone can get out of bed. So
right.
Even if it's, perspective too, is also a really humbling thing and a great way to practice gratitude is, making sure that you keep your life in perspective. I feel really silly saying this, but something I look forward to is, I talked a couple weeks ago about watching movies I haven't seen or should. And I don't know, I think about being able to consume more content and get more perspective on the world, even if it's fiction. I think I'm looking forward to even more of that. And I think furthering my gratitude. I have been woefully neglecting my gratitude journal. So maybe it's time to try, put some more effort into it.
Yeah. Like I've literally got this last week I've started scheduling my days. I talked about that a couple weeks ago, like scheduling breaks in the day for myself. But I literally have 20 minutes at the beginning of the day where I write just whatever I'm thinking about while I'm having my first cup of coffee, and 20 minutes at the end of the day where I'm like, what am I excited about for tomorrow? What's giving me motivation to just keep on keeping on,
Yeah. I'm excited to hear in a few weeks how that has cumulatively impacted you.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah.
Anyway, what are you looking forward to this week?
Thinking about consuming content, I very slowly for the last 2 years, 2.5 years, I've been sludging through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I made a bet with my friend that I would watch the entire universe in chronological order. And part of it was that I didn't have access to a lot of the content because Disney Plus didn't exist 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago. So there's only so many ways to watch Captain America. So part of it was just sourcing the things to watch. But I'm over halfway through the entire thing. There's a lot of TV watching, but some of the TV I'm finding I really like, and things that I thought I wouldn't like, I'm liking. But it's neat. It's a whole developed universe. And I am so geeking out over it because it's I love the attention to continuity detail that one show has to the other movie and vice versa. And I'm really enjoying it. So I'm looking forward to hopefully finishing it soon.
That's amazing. Wow. That's quite a feat. I have the list, if I ever choose to do it, but wow, I look at it and I'm overwhelming. No.
That's exactly what I did too. I'll sometimes get into phases where I'm I'd rather go watch an entire season of Mrs. Maisel or something. And it's but you could have just watched an entire season of Jessica Jones, with six, one half dozen the other.
Right. Yeah. Oh gosh.
Yeah. What are you looking forward to?
I don't know if I'm looking forward to it. I don't know. What is coming up for me is Disney Plus exists. We have Disney Plus. I have never, hate me if you will, I have never seen or cared to see any of the Star Wars stuff. I know the general plot points, broad brushstrokes for Kristen. And I'm I get it. Okay. I am your father. I get it. What do I need?
Spoiler.
Right. Spoiler alert. It's been 75 years. But anyway, that's coming up in my future. To Aaron loves Star Wars. Every time I see or talk to his family, I get shamed for not knowing Star Wars. So it's coming up. So I don't know if I'm looking forward to it or what, but I'm putting it out in the universe that I am looking forward to it, and it's going to be a great time, and I'm going to stay awake.
My recommendation when you watch especially the original three movies is to understand the era in which they were made and just remind yourself that nothing like it had ever been made before.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I'm I think I told you the other day about Wonder Woman 1984. Mm-hmm. I loved it because it was such an 80s movie, and it was crap, but all 80 movies are crap. So
right. It kind of made fun of the era.
Yeah. So I'm here for that. I'm in that mindset, but part of me is just I don't know. I remember trying to watch it as a kid and falling asleep. And that's just how I think of Star Wars now. But I'm going into it with my eyes open and hopefully they stay open.
It's funny. I've definitely watched movies that I loved as a kid, as an adult. And I'm like, why did I, what? You like this? Or I'll watch movies that I didn't like as a kid. And I go, oh my God, I didn't appreciate these details or these things that I went right over my head or something.
Yeah. So I'm hoping, I know that I'm not going to be like one of those, like, I'm 30 and now I'm obsessed with Star Wars, even though I knew nothing about it 2 months ago. Like, I don't plan on that happening, but I hope that I can appreciate it for what it is.
Oh, neat. Well, enjoy and keep us posted.
Yeah, I will. It'll be fun. We love all forms of happy news and happenings.
Be sure to send us your own day-to-day happy news. Cute pet stories, kids saying the darndest things, whatever you're up to, we love it all.
Email us at hnnpodcast@gmail.com. Also, follow us on social media at hnnpodcast for happy news throughout the week.
And be sure to subscribe to us through Patreon, where you'll get exclusive content and more.
Until next time, I'm Kristen.
And I'm Shayna.
Have a happy week.